time before us to again be instructed by thy truth. May God the Holy Spirit give us the information necessary for our strength and increase as we grow in grace, for we ask in Christ's name, amen. One thing I neglected to mention that I should mention, and that is we received a letter at home from Ralph LaRosa. This one came to the church, and I'm sure it's the same one. It will be posted, but there is information, or it's already posted, okay? Well, we have an extra if somebody wants to read it privately on the side. If you don't like to read off a bulletin board, this one's for you. Information, of course, is not good there regarding communism. It's only a matter of time before the insurgence of communism finally takes over, and it's becoming more and more difficult for missionaries and missionary activity. Ralph indicates, of course, that his visa was not renewed, and they're being very selective with the renewals of visas. They're doing it arbitrarily, and so I think arbitrarily based on effect. Those that aren't doing anything can stay there as long as they want to. That's the idea, as a part of the angelic conflict. So he must leave, and so he will be here probably in either mid-July or August, not here necessarily, but back in the States. He will be working with the missionary organization that is loosely affiliated with Baraka Church. Charlie Snyder asked him, you remember, before he went the last time, if he would do that. He almost did, and he said, no. He said, I feel I should be in the Philippines. At least he's concluded that his work there was effective to the extent where he can now turn all of the activities over to the nationals, and that's the way it's supposed to be done anyway. Also, all I have to do is get stung by a bee once. I learned very quickly. I went out and had keys made for the Cadillac today, so that we now have three sets of keys. So if my wife decides to take both sets again, I have a spare sitting in the drawer. The only thing I thought of is, you might pray that I don't do this, and that is go out of the house and the door's locked, and then I can't get back in. Maybe I'll make another key and put it somewhere else. Ironically, you remember about 4 years ago, my wife and I were in the accident out here on 43rd Avenue and we were stopped for the stoplight. The man who had the heart attack ran into the back of the Cadillac. I then subsequently bought a 70 DeVille coupe, and all the parts that you now see on mine came off of the other one, with the exception of the two doors and one fender. The other car, of course, was completely dismantled, and I found the keys for that today, and the key actually fits the door. It's exactly the same key, but the ignition wouldn't work, so it wouldn't have done me any good anyway. Thought I'd mention that as if some of you cared, but I thought it was interesting for me, at least. Some of you are even taking notes. You're so dedicated to the sound of my voice. I open my mouth and you immediately start taking notes. All right, we began last night with what is God's reasoning for forbidding sex before marriage. This may sound like a long, drawn-out thing. Why am I harping on the subject? And there's a perfectly legitimate reason for it. And if anything, if I can get you to be provoked in your mind and agitated into thinking, to realize that I'm a realist and that I realize that a lot of you have had premarital sex, and therefore you started off on the wrong track. You started off on the wrong foot. You started off in the wrong bed, is what it boils down to. And so what you should realize, and what I'm attempting to do, is to have you understand the importance of Bible class. The only way that you're going to recover from that error is to take in more doctrine than is necessary to even secure the average believer. Because you see, you are not an average believer. An average believer would be the believer that obeys the Word and stays a virgin until marriage. But as a realist, I know that I would venture to say 50% of you have had sex before marriage. All right, so what do we do about it? You need that much more doctrine to remove the scar tissue. And the way some of you functioned, your marriages are not going to last. And I know that this church is based on the stability of the congregation, and the stability of the congregation is based on the stability of your marriages. Because if you don't get along with each other, what happens oftentimes is you break up, and then the one continues coming to Bible class, and the other one won't come because the other one's there, and the other one is only coming because he or she knows that if they're there, the other one won't show up. It's rather vindictive. And then the new boyfriend or girlfriend is found, and they start floating them in, and that drives the other individual even further. Then the other one says, well, I'll show him. I'll walk in with my new boyfriend / girlfriend, depending upon... We're not talking illicit now. We're just simply talking. And so one sits in the back, and the other sits in the front, and the one in the back glares at the one in the front. Okay, and that's... It's not healthy, and it's happened here before. Then finally, they both get disgusted, and neither one of them end up in Bible class, and they quit going to church altogether. In some cases, they even marry unbelievers. So you see, what I'm trying to get across to you is that it is extremely important that you realize the condition of your soul right now. If you have not doubled your doctrinal intake from the time that you got married. And I am a firm believer in believing what the Word of God says. And you see, in the act of fornication, you begin to destroy your soul. And immediately, you present a barrier that shouldn't be there. You see, when you got saved, God started you off right. Here's your salvation adjustment. He removed all the barriers so that you could advance in doctrine. Well, now, you got saved, and then you got married. Then you put a barrier there. The barrier actually was placed before you got married. Let's put it here where it belongs. So it's a barrier placed in the idea of premarital sexual relationship, the famous PSR. Premarital sexual relationship places a barrier before marriage. In some cases, it is so damaging that the person may even miss their right man or their right woman because they're oblivious that they even exist. Now, let's say you've had premarital sex with your right man or right woman. You still build that barrier. Now you start off in marriage with a barrier. You have enough problems in marriage without adding more to it. So, here's another individual who started off properly, and they did not have premarital sex. They begin in marriage, and it takes X amount of Bible classes for them to attend to reach maturity in the prescribed amount of years that is allocated them by God. See, you only have so much time. I've said this before, but with some of you, if you could live here for 200 years, you might mature. But you're not going to be here for 200 years. And that's only a hyperbole because it's doubtful even as such. You'd probably figure out a way not to mature in 200 years. If God gave you 500, you might not mature. I'm convinced that some people just don't want to mature. That's the only thing I can see. It's the same logic that is going around today. It's absolutely absurd. It's ridiculous. This guy Bible, I wish he had another name, but nevertheless, this guy Bible, who was finally convicted and sentence was passed on today, and he was given death, the death penalty, for killing that and sexually molesting that 7-year-old child. The defense attorney gets up, and of course he was a sweetheart, had a ponytail, you know, going down the small of his back. I used to love that when I was with the police department because it made a real handle when I wanted to get a hold of the guy. I pulled a guy clear out of a car one day by that ponytail. Of course, it was police brutality and all the rest of it. And it probably was, but it, quite frankly, it made it a lot easier than somebody with a crew cut. This guy gets up and he says, Judge, after all, he says, it has not been proven at all that the death penalty in any way is a deterrent to these types of crimes. And so I'm sitting there and I'm fuming. Of course, I'm absolutely furious. So I said, all right, so my wife's got to listen to this. And so I say, let's see if we can present a little pattern here. Here's the scenario. We've got 10 people in the room. We've got 5 people that have been accused of first-degree murder and 5 who are considering the fact that they might. All right? So I walk in the room, and I want the prerogative since it's my illustration. I walk in the room with a .45 automatic, and I say, you 5 have been found guilty of murder in the first degree, and I walk up to the first, and I put the .45 right up to his temple and blow the whole left side of his head out. I go to the other one, and I put it in the front, and I blow the back side of his head out. I go to the other one, I go to the other side, and blow the other side of his head out. The third, to the back, and I blow the front side of his head out, and then the other here, and it just simply blows all the way down to his privies. Okay. Then I look at the others, and I say, did that teach you anything? And they say, no, we don't believe that that's a deterrent to what our desires are. And so I still have how many rounds left? 2. And so I simply, well, I don't have to. There's already one in there. And I simply twirl the thing for a bit. As opposed to going in there and saying, now as the judge, I give you 1 to 5 or 10 to 20 and parole at 7. That's the way it usually reads. 20 years, you're eligible for parole after 7 years. Okay? 7 years. Go down the line with these guys. These people are going to say, what a joke. Where's the person that I'm supposed to murder? I can't wait. Don't tell me it's not a deterrent. The same thing would be a scenario if you had 5 convicted rapists and you had 5 who were thinking about it. Now, you use the same .45, but it's not punishable by death. But mutilation, yes. We'll leave that scenario alone at that point. Since it's my illustration, I can play with it as much as I'd like. They, of course, will never be concerned of ever ending up a spiritual wiener. All right, so we have that, well, spiritual winners, spiritual whiners, and spiritual wieners, which are simply that. Okay. Why does God forbid the believer, or anyone for that matter? Because under the principles of the angelic conflict, a marriage is extremely vulnerable to satanic opposition shortly after the two wed. And then, from then on, it's under constant bombardment. Why add to the conflict by aiding and abetting the enemy? That's like saying, we're going to go to war, and we're going to give all of our soldiers that go to war weapons that backfire. But you'll never know when they do. But when it does, and we'll be silly about it, we'll go back to the old bolt-action weapons, the headspace is so wide, okay, the go gauge falls out of the breech. That's pretty bad. Or the no-go, whichever. Depending. There's so much headspace. Well, you know that there are tons of pressure in that breech. And if it's too much, it'll simply explode. Well, you don't know when that's going to happen. So there you are, and you're in the heat of battle, and you're going, bam, you know, and you're saying, boy, it didn't go off that time. Don't you think that those guys would feel a bit intimidated? And then all of a sudden, down the line, you know, you've got this foxhole dug, and you hear, boom, and the guy goes, oh, and he falls over, and you look, and you say, uh-oh, and the whole side of his face is gone because the weapon just went off in his face. So now, you see, that's not a deterrent either. Now you raise it with great confidence. No, you've already got two strikes against you. The third one is out. Oh, people, why should you start a marriage with two and a half strikes against you? And Satan's on the mound. And he's got a curveball that you'll never be able to hit. He's got a screwball that'll just absolutely screw you up. It'll tie you up in knots. He's got a sinker that actually goes under the plate. It drops so fast. And it's in the strike zone until it gets into the batter's range. So you say, well, how can I recover from that? Crash program. And crash program means that if it takes the average believer 5 years to reach maturity, coming to Bible class on a nightly basis, you need to have twice as much doctrine in that period of time to even end up even. And you don't. And yet, you want your marriages to work. And I'm here to tell you they're not going to work. Because you see, all of this was performed in the attraction stage. And barrier here, later parlayed into barrier here, post-marital barrier, prevents you from ever moving into the two stages where that marriage counts. And that's called compatibility and rapport. They will never be developed as long as that barrier exists. And you built that barrier by premarital sex. That's why God doesn't want you to mess around. Now you say, okay, well, I didn't have premarital sex before my first marriage. But this is my second. All right. Same picture. Because the guy you're married to now, you had premarital sex. And a divorce places another barrier. For what it's worth, dear people, I have to tell you this. Very few divorced people ever end up doing diddly in the Christian life. And I'll tell you why. It's right here. You say, well, they're still alive and they're still breathing. Yeah, well, God's trying to tell them something. But some of you think, well, I had a divorce, or two, or three. It doesn't matter. I'll just get with the doctrinal program and just flow along and come as I please. Don't you want to reach maturity? Maybe that's the point, as I said before initially. That's probably the reason why people don't care in the Christian life. They don't want to reach maturity because they don't fully understand what escrow blessings are. And what the portfolio of invisible assets are all about. See, I'm a very curious person. Before I get gifts, I try to anticipate. That's why my wife says absolutely nothing to me. Nothing, not one word, because any word, I don't care what the word is, I'll build that and I'll draw and I'll start putting. And I'll push it to its end conclusion and so on. I got it off, and it makes her so mad because I figured it all out. Right? That's like that night that Lucy was talking with Shirley. And all she did was say, that's all I needed. I had the whole plan figured out. And I was supposed to be surprised. So when I walked in, I said, oh, I'm so surprised. Okay? And that's just the way I am. Well, I'm the same way in the Christian life. I heard that God had something for me. What is it? Well, He's had it for you from eternity past. Really? It's in a neat little box with a bow on it. Do you want it? Nah. And it's the greatest thing that you could... Nah. It's for nothing. Nah. It's far above all that you could ever think or hope for. That's the game you play. And I know you play the game because if you didn't, you'd be here every night. See, that's the way it works. I don't care whether you feel intimidated or not. That's the truth. I got that from somebody. Some telephone operator. All right, we left off last night with point E. I said, I was really hoping you'd review tonight. No. Point E. Well, this is... We did have point E. No one is ever the same after salvation. We are either better or worse. The same thing with marriage. No one is ever the same after marriage. You're either better or worse, and it depends upon the individual. And I'm here to tell you that it's directly related and is proportionate to the amount of availability that you make doctrine and how important it is in your life. Doctrine is available, but how you make yourself available to it. And I'm sure if I gave every one of you a survey right now and you were to write on your paper the answer to this question, if your marriage is not what you would like it to be, would you like it to be 100 times better than what it is? Or, my marriage is what I would like it to be right now, but if it could be 100 times better, would anyone here, don't raise your hand, please, say, nah, I want to go back, I want it to be about half of what it is now. Just above fight. One step above throwing things. Just a smidge above screaming and yelling at each other. Anybody go for that? No, I guess no takers, huh? How about you single people? I want to start with my marriage and I want it to last for a month. Maybe 3 weeks. And I want it to end in disaster to the point, and I'll be pregnant at the time. That's really rough for you guys. Or my wife will be pregnant at the time and she'll never let me see my child, that sort of thing. Don't you see how terrible that is? Don't you see what that divorce does? I have the right to see my kid. Now you don't get a court order, a restraining order, and go through all that. And by the way, in the Christian life, it's worse than in the unbeliever life. The ratio of divorces is phenomenal. You know what they did today? It's really got me. They run about, I don't know how many they said, 8 or 10 a week in the state of Arizona. Maybe it was 8 or 10 a day. Right? And they said they was getting just too backlogged. Too backlogged. So they said, we've got to do something. Let's accelerate this thing. 120 in a 6-hour period. Divorced. 120 people, just like that. Boom! Don't tell me a person is just the same that they were after the divorce. Not so. And I know because we have a lot of people here who've suffered that experience. You're never the same. You're never the same. And those of you that might even be contemplating, you know, marriage a little rough, finances, blah, 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 I'll get rid of this jerk, da, 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 do, 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 and I'll find me another one. Listen, you don't know what you're looking for. You don't know what you're looking for. That's like a fellow I met here a while back, and he says, how do you like your new 4Runner? He says, I love it. He says, I bought one, I hate it. I says, what? He says, yeah. He says, I had an 85 4Runner. It was fantastic. So I don't know why I traded it. I got this new thing and it's a piece of junk. He says, I've had it. Now, this was right after I got mine. He says, I've had it 4 months. I have never had it off the road, number one. It has spent more time in the shop than I've owned it. You see, he divorced his first 4Runner, see? He says, I don't know why did I get rid of it? And you know how many people admit afterwards, if they're honest with themselves, that's something I should have never done? See, with a car, you're dealing with something metallic. You know, you throw it in a junkyard and squash it. You can't do that with a man or a woman. Judge says, all right, a decree of divorce, squash them. Bah! You know, and they go out in this little room and this thing kind of and boxes them off. Convenient, sure. See, the guilty party always gets shot. And so the innocent one then has the right to remarry because the former is dead. Biblical law. Not the way it works. The law just hasn't quite gotten to that point. Ever. Nor will it ever. A person is never the same after salvation. Better or worse. A person is never the same after marriage. Better or worse. Point F. A male with virtue will never take a female past her own volition in the sphere of intimacy. Remember, please, this might be a surprise to some of you men or you males, but here's a male who has that strange thing called volition. Positive and negative poles. Here's the female, and she has a strange thing that is called volition, positive and negative. In the act of intimacy, regardless of what that act is, a real man, a man who loves his wife, a man who wants to protect his wife, will never take her past the exercise of her volition. He'll always keep that intimacy within the realm of her volition. If she says no, that means no. Okay? Whatever the act of intimacy might be. Of course, some of you right away get into the idea that intimacy is always sexual intercourse. No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about sex in general. Remember, I've made this a very plain statement that whatever you two agree upon, see, there's the key, agree upon. Anything goes, provided you agree on it. Why? Because the man has not taken his wife beyond the capacity of her own volition. Never take advantage of her. Because you'll suffer the consequence. Unless it's just operation self-gratification. And you don't need a woman for that. The man must always be in control of the man-woman relationship. Why? Because the woman is the responder. And so if the man gets out of control, look, here's the man who's the head of the woman. Now, use your own body as an illustration. Your head must always have control of your body. Correct? That is why drunkenness is forbidden in the scriptures. Why? I'm not talking about a buzz, and I'm not talking about social drinking. I'm talking about drunkenness, where the behavioral change is evident in the individual, and they drink for that behavioral change. That's an alcoholic. I was so glad to hear, and I've been hearing this lately, people are finally agreeing that alcoholism, first of all, is not a disease. You don't buy diseases in bottles. You don't go in and say, I'd like to have some, I think I'll have some pneumonia. Give me a bottle of pneumonia. You don't buy that. Do you have any tuberculosis tablets? Huh? No, but when it comes to alcohol, I would say, that's a disease. No, it isn't. There's volition involved. But people drink for the behavioral change. Now, what happens there is the head no longer has control of the body. And that's one of the things that police officers do to see whether or not a person is what? Under the influence. See, what is he saying in effect? He says, under the influence. We're all under the influence.
Of what? Right now, hopefully, you're all under the influence of your head. But when you drink too much, your head doesn't know what to do. And look what happens to the rest of the body. You see somebody walking along and all of a sudden, boom, they fall down. And you say, come on, fella, get up. I used to have them at the park. I'd go through the park and those guys, man, I tell you, they would drink wine, those big jugs of 49 cents, 5 gallons, you know, that stuff. Talk about rot gut. And they'd hide it up in the trees. Well, I would be across the street with binoculars. All right, because there was a pawn shop across the street, and every time I'd walk in there, he'd hand me the binoculars. He knew what I was going to do. And I'd stand in the window, and I'd just, you know, I'd go, oh, there's one, and I'd see where these guys have all their stashes. And the worst thing in the world for them, of course, is for you to find not an empty bottle, but a full one. Because that means they've been, you know, panhandling the whole morning to get that one bottle. Policy was, if you found it, you took the top off and you like this. Well, I was doing that one day, and one of the guys said, he said, now you're throwing it on the ground. He said, wait a minute. He said, do you mind if I fall down and just open my mouth underneath it? Would you think that way? Don't you see the thinking? The head is no longer in control of the body. Now, what happens when a man goes wacko? When you lose your self-control, mister, and I know some of you hear the do. And then you wonder why she acts so funny. That's the body. There's the head. You drunk? See? She's going to respond to that. As the body responds to the head. As the church responds to its head. Wouldn't it be awful if our Lord got out of control? He said, well, he can't. He's immutable. Point. Walk in his steps, mister. You see? Have full control. And never lose control. But once you do, don't be amazed when she starts acting funny. Because now you see the body is working independently of the head. Because the head has lost control of the body. I don't care whether you're a member of the ACLU or the Women's Liberation Movement or any of that stuff. That's all garbage anyway. Thus saith the Lord. The husband is the head of the woman. But when the head loses control, okay, what does the woman do? She acts weird. My wife was listening to a program recently, and this family was going on vacation. And so after the vacation, they were really looking forward to this vacation. Christian couple. From the time that they started on that vacation, she started griping about something. She was a Christian whiner. She whined, and she bitched, and she complained. It was too hot. He was driving too fast. There wasn't enough room in the car. She had to pee. She did this. She had to... Okay? And you got to expect that, guys. When you're going cross-country, be mindful of the fact that you may be a Gila monster, but she's not. You may be able to hold it from 8 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock at night. She can't. Every hour on the hour, bing, just like that. Dong, she's got to pee. Honey, we got to stop. I know. Imagine driving from New York to Arizona with 4 females. Boy, did I learn patience. Dad, yeah, I know. Can't you all go at once? Time it. Go anywhere. I don't have to. I don't have to. I don't have to. Get in the car, right? Get in the car. 5 miles. I have to. Well, you're not going to. You learn patience.
If a man who does not respect your volition, ladies, is a wrong man for you. In other words, if the guy says, "I don't care what you think, I don't care what you're saying, I don't care what you, I don't care," that's not the right person for you. And you should have picked up on that long before you married that jerk. Now, on this trip, you thought I forgot, didn't you? On this trip, this gal just complained and complained and complained. So when they got back, she was being interviewed. And so they said, "Did you have a good time?" And she says, "The most awful time I've ever had." She says, "I complained from the time that we left till the time we got home." And he says, "Well, what do you think would have taken care of that situation? If my husband would have simply looked over and said to me, 'Shut up!'" Thus endeth the story. Now you say, well, isn't that disrespecting her volition? No. She needed to be told that. By the way, sometimes women really get on their little, you know, they get on their little broom. And boy, they start in and you got to come out with a chainsaw. There's no question about it. Here she flies by. Okay, and then she's come back the other way. And finally, boom, 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 boom. All right, now can we talk? Boy, she's riding that thing. Woo! You can tell when that happens. You know, she goes to the closet and gets the broom and climbs on the thing and starts beating the back of the whip, you know that it's not kinky sex. She may not do that physically, but you can take one look at her and know, eyes flare, nostrils flare, horns sprout, nails turn into daggers, you know, they grow out about this far. Freddy. Hockey mask, the whole bit. And you want to hit her with a hockey puck or a stick. And occasionally, by the way, you just have to, you know, very quietly say, "Why don't you shut your mouth? Nothing you're saying is worth listening to." Oh, is she going to get mad? But you say it quietly because it's true. And maybe that's what she's looking to hear. She's on a tirade. Thanks, I needed that. Now back to the point. However, a man who does not respect your volition, ladies, is the wrong man for you. Now, we've just shown you an exception. It's not an exception to your volition. It's when the body is now not under control of the head. The head's in control, but the body is going wild. Wouldn't that be awful? I mean, really, wouldn't it be awful? You know, you're going along, and all of a sudden the body just decides to do whatever it wants to do. Because you, the head, you're the thinker. You're doing the thinking. Now, see, my hands are moving because I'm telling them to do so. What I'm saying is because my brain is telling it to say that. Wouldn't it be awful, though, if I just came out with some stupid-sounding words? You go, and I'd say, "I'm sorry, I don't have control of my mouth." You'd say, "This guy is weird." All of a sudden, my leg decides to start going in that direction. And the other one decides to go in that direction. Well, I'm in trouble. And I look kind of funny, wouldn't I? And you say, "What's wrong with that man?" And at the same time, my mouth is saying things that are completely disoriented and uncoordinated with regard to what's happening with my legs. Because at one point there, I have to say, "Ow."
and yet none of that's coming out. I'm reciting poetry. Don't you see the irrelevancy of what happens in a relationship by irrelevancy? There's nothing relevant there. There's no coordination. There's no agreement. There's no concord. There's all disagreement. The body has decided to go off on its own. And it is true that a woman is the praise of her husband. Others will see her, and they will praise him because of her. And I might as well say it since I'm thinking it, or will say, the poor man. You say, well, what's wrong with the poor woman? Folks, I didn't write the book. Go to the Lord and say, how come you didn't say anything about the poor woman? But duck. When you think that. God is not in any way involved in women's liberation. Do you understand that? And until you get that, you will never feel fulfilled as a woman. Some of you guys could do well, too, just being a man instead of a jerk. And, of course, with that, I must add that there are some of you here who are either newly married, planning on getting married, and with the way you're going, your marriage is not going to last a year. And quite frankly, I've gone another step, and this is going to be my policy. If I don't see you in class on a regular basis, you can have some rabbi marry you. I'm not going to marry you. I'm not going to be guilty of joining two people together that I don't think are worthy. Because your marriage will be the closest thing you'll ever see of the lake of fire. It'll be hell on earth. And why should I be a part of that? Point 14. In a nation and society that depends upon divine institutions of marriage and family, the consequences of destruction of marriages are devastating. You say, nice, I was supposed to get all that? Well, I had to read it. It's all one sentence. But now I'll break it up for you. In a nation and society that depends on the divine institution of marriage, and family, the consequences of the destruction of marriage are devastating. You see, the consequences are devastating because it affects and directly affects the worth of that nation. Some of you are very nationalistically minded. Today's Flag Day. You may be appalled at what's going on in our country with regard to the flag. As a matter of fact, I was planning this evening, but because of the fact that I forgot, I was going to have us stand and salute the flag. Maybe we can do that before we leave, in honor of the flag of this country. Today is the day that is set aside for that very day. It's called Flag Day. Some of you may have the flag out. You may have flown the flag. You may be grateful and thankful that we live in a free country. But I'll tell you something. If you are not functioning under GAP on a daily basis, you're doing more than any communist could ever think of doing to destroy it. Why? Because you see, as a family goes, or a marriage goes, so the nation goes. And what holds the family together? Doctrine. The only thing that's going to give you the strength to ward off all of the attacks and the darts that are propelled from the arsenal of Satan's strategies. Some of you go out to the battlefield, you don't have a stick of armor on. You don't have a thing. And you get out there and you get blasted. And there you are, full of holes, laying in the street. Or lying in the street. Chicken's leg. Somebody says, what's wrong? And you start blaming everybody around you. No, it's your fault. You lost the battle. And imagine all the Christians throughout the United States losing the spiritual battle. Now what do we have? That's why I'm so glad our kids are in camp this week. And you know what the theme is? Winners. Soldiers of Christ. Winning on the battlefield. But I must admit, it may only last a week or two when they get back. And you know why? Hold on. You're going to love this. They're going to come back to families that are losers. They need support. You're going to support them when they get back? Are you going to say, great son, great daughter, boy, I'm right behind you, and they see in your life the very thing that they've been hearing? It's tough, isn't it? Huh? Well, that hits home, doesn't it? And yet we sit as parents and we say, well, our kid went off to camp, and within a month, why, all that enthusiasm was gone. Why? Because they didn't see any of that support. Here's a kid that's going to Bible class every day, twice a day, for the whole week. Every day. Twice a day. Matter of fact, they start off their day in the Word. Then they have noonday in the Word. And then at night, in the Word. Okay? Three times a day they're in the Word. And their whole discussions revolve around the Word. Now they're going to get back. What are they going to hear? What's going to be for them at home? Good Greek. What's going to be for them at home? Excellent Greek. What'll they have when they get here? What'll they see? What a letdown. Were you going to class tonight, hon? Nah. My toe hurts. Do you think that Bob or any of those counselors are going to put up with my toe hurts? I'm not going to chapel tonight? I don't care if you have to limp. Say, I may not have done the right thing by sending my kid to camp. He's liable to come back and want to be a pastor or something. Or a missionary. Or a ranger. You may come to me on Sunday and say, my kid came home Friday. First thing he spit on the ground and said, where the hell's the enemy, Dad? Point me to the battle. Now, son. Relax. Just relax. You're home now. A new atmosphere. Back to the old sinful grind. Back to the sin nature again, son. Back to the norm, where we just go to class when we feel like it. It was nice that you had to put up with that three times a day for the entire week, but we don't have that kind of a rigorous program here. And you watch Junior as he sees that inconsistency in his growth and then wonder why he's not worth the powder to blow him up when he's old enough to have some impact in life. There's the problem. Don't you see it? And by the way, nobody at the camp said, when you get back there, you know, get them all fired up and tell them that when these kids get back there, they better be able to handle them. Look, dear people, don't you see, if you would be honest with yourself and look back, that's why you've had some failures with some of your children. Wasn't their fault. You blew it. You never give a child, for example, the option of going to class. They'll never want to go. And that sin nature will say inside, trying to figure out a way how to con this one. They're always trying to con you in not coming to class. But you see, you say, well, where'd they learn that from? Guess. The same con you pulled for not coming. And then you wonder why your kids don't succeed. Hey, they want to be like mom and dad. That's the problem. Why do marriages work? In a lot of cases, because the pattern is right in front of them. Yeah, the pattern is right in front of them. Well, mom and dad have been married for 50 years, and they love each other, and they respect each other, and they're always... They're not going to have problems in their marriage. That's what they're looking for. They want that kind of a relationship. Now, there's the other part, too. And I must admit this. Where they look at a marriage and they say, ooh, that's a marriage I never want to get involved in. And so they do just the opposite, which is right. And I know of cases where a husband and a wife have been inseparable because of the disasters they saw in the marriages on both sides of their relationships. But don't follow the losing pattern. Well, Dad was a loser, so I guess I'll be a loser. He wasn't much of a husband. I guess I'll follow the same example. No. Maybe somebody told you once that the ideal passage in the Word of God is like father, like son. You want to hear the advice my father gave me? We've been married... How much? Five? Three? Three or four years. At that real critical stage. My dad says, I'll set you up in business. Give you all the money you need. Get rid of her. I said, what? He says, hey, there are plenty of fish in the sea. Get rid of her. You don't need her. She can take care of the kid. Fatherly advice. This is my own father, my flesh and blood father. Get rid of your wife. He was living with us at the time. He said, what'd you do? I got rid of him. Your own father? That's right. I said, you see that door? He said, yeah. Out. Why, should I have taken his advice? He says, you can't have a wife and a child when you're in business. I mean, after all, you make money, what happens? It has to go right. Kid gets sick, there goes a whole week's pay. What? Another child? Whoa, now, forget it. May work a year for that. They're out of the way, all the money's yours. Fatherly advice. There's the door, said the son. And he left. And you notice, by the way, I'm still married to the same one. I didn't take his advice at all. So you see, when you hear me say, my daddy gave me advice, the advice may not always be the right advice, cluck. Because your daddy may have been a jerk.
Subpoint A, most divorces occur in the first 5 years of marriage. Of course, you haven't heard that from me before. Which means the victims are often very young children. There's the real victim in a divorce. The poor kids. They're innocent. Do you know the strain that a child goes through when two selfish, stupid people divorce? Do you have any idea? Irresponsible parents, selfish parents, childish parents, ignorant, stupid. And here's a poor kid sitting there, seeing them fight back. Oh, cool. Kids just, I mean, they're just elated when their parents are fighting. That throws them into terror. Absolute terror, and sometimes it scars them for life. This is their mommy, and this is their daddy, and these are the two that they're supposed to respect, and they're fighting in front of you, their children. Don't fight in front of your children. By the way, if you're going to have a fight, you know what you do? First thing, if you know you're going to fight after you're married, build a room that's soundproof. Yeah. Then after your children come, just, you know, restrain yourself. Say, son, we'll be right back. Come on, honey. And then close the door, lock it, and then just go wild. And then come out. See? You say, you can't do that. I know you can't. Because some of you are so stupid, you fight in front of your children. And I hope if you ever do that, one of yours is as intelligent as Robin was when she broke us up one time. Here we were, going at it. She walks up and says, all right, guys, break it up. Fight's over. We thought that was so funny. She couldn't have been more than what, 7? 8? 6? 5? 5-year-old! Okay, guys, break it up. We started laughing so hard, we forgot why we were arguing. Of course, my wife still had the phone in her hand. You say, well, what's wrong with that? It was a wall phone. So what was the argument about? Her talking too long on the phone. She says, oh, you want the phone? I told you, don't mess with her. She says, you want the phone? Here's the phone. She gave me the phone. Wall and all. That's the time I stormed out of the house, and I closely related to that time where I did the great thing of breaking the front window. Real smart. Remember I told you, you know you've graduated in life when you rent a motel and there isn't a fist hole in the bathroom door. You know you've come up in life. You've gone beyond that because people can afford now to buy that type of a motel room for the evening and they don't do those things. Just the doors are made better, that's all. You know what they're doing now, don't you? They're steel doors. I couldn't believe it. Most of the doors now in motels are steel. Yeah. I see some guy getting mad. Hey, you dirty bitch. Checks in with two hands, walks out with a hand bandaged up like this. Oh, I see you had a fight with your wife last night. How'd you like our doors? A real trauma. It's a trauma when children are confronted with parents that are fighting. And the most traumatic of all is when they hear those words that they don't understand. Daddy is going away. And then you stupid women, you start this, Daddy doesn't love you. And who do you love more, Mommy or Daddy? Stupid females do that. Bitches do that to their children. Not sensible women. So you didn't get along with a guy. It's still their father.
and they've got to get along with him the rest of their lives. But you see, you're a vindictive bitch. Or the husband who says, your woman, your wife, your mother is there. You don't down the other person. Look, you don't like a church, you leave it. You shut up about it. You don't like a woman, you leave her. You shut up about her. You have problems in your marriage? Shut up. Somebody comes to you and says, why'd you divorce? None of your business. Leave it at that. Don't compound it by building scar tissue. Well, he... Conversation. For the rest of your life, you're talking about the guy that's dead to you. You see what you're doing? You're just talking about corpses. Now, I'll tell you what that corpse did to me. What good is that? What is that going to solve? Where is that going to help the hearer? And then oft times worse than that, who's in the room? The little ones. Oh, he said, well, they don't understand it. Don't give me that. I was there. They even tried speaking another language. English. I could pick up a few words anyway. I was only 5. I can remember it like it was yesterday. That's impressed upon my frontal lobes. I can see him standing there, arguing. So now, what do you do with the kid? Oh, we can't have a kid. Get rid of the kid. Stuff him in a school somewhere. Get rid of him. Now I know what's wrong with you. Now what I'm saying is, no one should have to go through that. And yet we do it all the time. Why? Because we're selfish and stupid. And egocentric. We think about one person. The first person. Me. I.